Thank you once again, Mr. Radabaugh. As we were talking about various people learning new roles and doing different things in the congregation, it's always wonderful to be able to see that. And if you think back to when you, I don't know, maybe your first memory coming into church, you think about from that time until where you are now, and you consider the number of people who have had an indelible mark in your life, what it is that got you here, where you are. And it kind of brings to my mind, I guess, one of the magazines, one of the publications that Mr. Armstrong did, The Incredible Human Potential. We would talk about what is your potential. And I think it's been a while since we've covered something, or maybe you've covered something before I came here, because I've only been here for a couple of years. But I always think this is one of those great things to discuss. What is our potential? Sometimes we can get so caught up in the muckety-muck of the day-to-day, and you're just trying to get by. You're just trying to, you fall into the Sabbath if you got to have any planning, or maybe you plan for it, but you're just like dreading when it stops, because when that sun goes down, you have to get right back into the grind of things, and it can be very difficult. And so sometimes I think it's beneficial for us to kind of take a step back and just think about what our potential is. What is our potential? If we know what our potential is, it can instill in us motivation. It can give us clarity, vision. Most importantly, maybe for us, especially as we look at the world around us that is struggling with so much, it can give us purpose. A lot of people today want to know what their purpose is. They have to find themselves. This has been going on for a long time. You can read through in Ecclesiastes. Solomon was doing the same thing, asking himself, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? What is man that you are mindful of him? Trying to figure out what our purpose is. What is our potential? If you would like to know what your potential is, answering that question is an amazing endeavor in and of itself. But how can we really know that? How can we really know what our potential is? I'll give you the answer today. Google. You can Google it. There are actually 832 million results. And it took Google all of half a second, a little bit more than half a second, 0.51 seconds, to give me 832 million results for what is my potential. It's pretty astounding. You can discover your personal potential. There are articles about that. How to realize your true potential. These are just some of the articles, some of the books. There are self-help authors and motivational speakers who are there to assist us for a small price, to assist us in finding out what our potential is. 7 concrete steps to reaching your full potential. Another one that came up was, what does achieving your potential really mean? If you recall back a few years ago, they had that 10,000 hour concept, where if you could do something for 10,000 hours, you would become an expert, like a master at it, and you would be able to almost self-actualize, reach your potential. There's another one that came up, how to know and grow your potential. So again, 832 million. It would take me a while to sift through all of those. So those are just a few of the results that came up when I looked this up. But Google isn't the answer for everything. I say that in jest. That's not the actual answer. Let's turn to Psalm 8:4. We already referenced this, but it's good to read it. Psalm chapter 8, verse 4. Because this is, again, as long as man has been around, this question about potential is there. The whole reason I would say that social media is there is because one of the big things that it does is we compare our potential, or what we perceive as our potential, to what we thought was going to be the potential of the people we graduated high school with, how much they have attained, or used to work here or didn't work here, and we see, oh, they have reached a higher level of potential than I did, or I thought I was going to be, and we look and we compare potential among one another. But this whole idea of looking at it is such, it's just ingrained in us, it seems, as human beings. Psalm chapter 8, verse 4 says, "What is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him?" David had a very personal relationship with God. He's going like, why are you paying attention to me? I'm nothing. What is man that you're actually mindful of him? I recognize, almost like what God did with Job at the very end, right? Job said, "Ah, I didn't really see you in the way that I should have seen you, and now I see." Well, David kind of grasped that he was small and insignificant. He says, "Why are you paying attention to me, God? Why are you doing this?" And so it's an important endeavor for us, I think, to consider our potential. What is our potential? And I think there are two ways to look at this. One of the ways here, as we've already seen, as David was asking, I mean, humanly speaking, what is our potential? And we can often define our potentials as, what can I become? Right? What can I become? I mentioned the term self-actualization. It kind of answers this question of, what can I become? We will define our potential oftentimes as what I can become. Self-actualization is the achievement of one's full potential through creativity, independence, spontaneity, and a grasp of the real world. So you look at the environment where you are, your creativity, your independence, what you can spontaneously actually achieve depending on the various inputs and what is at play there, and reaching your full potential, self-actualization, being able to become something. What can I become? This whole concept lines right up with the theory there that Maslow put out about the hierarchy of needs. And this is, again, you know, we're talking about, I don't have to lift a hymnal anymore. Somebody just pushes a button for me. And I said, first world problems, right? Other people don't have that issue. But we're like, I did it too. I turned around. It's like, son, you dropped the ball on that button click, right? But it's a silly thing. But it's like, isn't that nice of us to have that as a problem? And this is the whole concept of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where we have the freedom and we have a position in life where that can be something that we're a little miffed about. We're like, that should have been better. But other individuals who are going through trying to exist, even in our country, there are those who are in need. There are those, you consider, again, when you have a natural disaster, the individuals who lost family members in the collapse of the tower in Florida, people who are going through the various states of the hurricane, now tropical storm that I just lost her name of, right? But we have these things going on. There's drought over in the west part of the country. Lake Mead, which provides so much water for the majority of the western population because it's all there in California, Las Vegas, down in the Arizona area. It's at a third capacity. And so if they don't do something, then next year they're going to have to put in some pretty draconian measures to stem the amount of water that is going out of the reservoir because it's down 1,024 feet, just the depth, because it used to be a huge body of water there, and it's much smaller now than it used to be. There are people who are going through difficulties. And when you go through difficulties, you generally don't have the liberty or the mental space to consider other things like, what could I become? What is my potential? You don't care because you have to pay mortgage. You have to pay the bills. And so this is why, again, when we go through on a day-to-day basis every week, we can kind of forget what our potential is and how God sees us as Christians. And so, again, we as human beings can look and say, what can I become? Ephesians chapter 4. And according to Maslow, when he came up with his hierarchy of needs, he actually posited that only 1%, which is kind of funny because we've had whole arguments in this country about the 1%ers, right? But only 1% of all humanity ever gets to the point of self-actualization. They're the ones who actually get there to be able to reach their full potential. Only 1%. The rest of us, struggle to get through the various other things, having shelter, having security and safety, having food, being able to work, the various other tiers that he had there, but reaching full potential, he says only 1%. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11, we see here that God has lined out some things. One could say roles, things that you could become. He gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers. He gives these roles. You could say some doctors, some scientists, some astronauts, teachers, lawyers, moms, artists, musicians, right? We saw that he gave of the Spirit at the time that he was building the tabernacle in the wilderness. There were some who did fine craftsman work of brass and of the various other metals, and some who were fine jewelers. There were some who they dealt with the cloth, and so they were the ones who wove and made the garments of the priest, who made the walls of the tabernacle that were rolled up and moved. It's a pretty amazing thing. God gave some to do these things. And these roles that we see here, again, are things that, while they are callings from God and they are ordained positions from God, they're things that you could become, right? And we know that we're to become a kingdom of priests, as God has called us to be there. But he gives some for that, for the equipping of the saints, for the work of ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. So God lines out things that we can become. I already referenced this. I have to stop. My mind goes, and then I talk about the concept before we turn there. Let's go to Revelation chapter 1 and verse 6, and we'll see here. Revelation chapter 1 and verse 6. We read that he has made us kings and priests to his God and Father. To him be glory and dominion forever and ever. He has made us kings and priests, or again, a kingdom of priests. This is what God says that we can become. We can become this. And so humanly, we look at these and we're like, those are pretty cool things. I would like to be a doctor. I would like to be a lawyer. I would like to be a pastor or a teacher. I would like to be a king or a priest. We're like, that's great. You know what? That's the potential. That's what I could become. And so we'll pursue that. But then we see in Matthew chapter 18, humanly speaking, we can take that one step farther. Or maybe not one step further, but one step backwards. Matthew chapter 18, verse 1. We'll read verses 1 through 5. Again, we read that God gives positions and roles for us to fulfill, things that we can become. And he has planned for us different roles to become in his kingdom. But Matthew chapter 18, verse 1 says, at that time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, who then is greatest in the kingdom of heaven? I mean, they're going to be kings, kingdom of priests. You know, we know that there were priests and there were Levites. You know, the priests got to do one thing, the Levites got to do other things. There were four different courses of the Levites, and they were around the tabernacle there. Some of them did this, some of them did that. They had different responsibilities. So who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child to him, set him in the midst of them, and said, assuredly I say to you, unless you are converted and become as little children, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one little child like this in my name receives me. You see, when we start talking about what we can become, naturally the discussion is, well, is what I can become better than what you can become, or vice versa? Am I a better Christian, a better pastor, a better mother, a better musician, a better... And so then we start comparing this. And then again, this is why I made reference to social media. We compare ourselves amongst ourselves, and we kind of get into this about what we can become. Luke chapter 22, we see a similar conversation occurring among the disciples. Luke chapter 22, verse 24 through 27. Here we see again at the lead up to the Passover ordinance in the New Testament, Luke chapter 22, verse 24. We read that it says, "Now there was also dispute among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest." They already had the other conversation. Remember, and he brought a child and he put him on his lap. And he said, well, become like a child, be humble. They bring it up again and they're arguing. Now this time they don't ask him who's going to be the greatest. He has to address it after the fact because he sees their conversation and their hearts. But they're arguing. There's a dispute among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest. It could be a part of this that, you know, as they're setting up the table, who's going to sit where at that table? Because you know, well, which of us is closest to Christ? Who's going to sit on the right hand or the left hand? Well, there was another conversation where James and John's mother came and asked that of them. So who's going to sit on his right and on his left? Is it Peter? Is it Thomas? Is it, you know, which of the disciples are going to sit there? So it could have been a conversation here about where they were sitting around the table and kind of trying to assume who was going to be where. But he said to them, Christ said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. You know, the whole idea of a benefactor, somebody who gives you something, you benefit from them, and then it's almost like, well, then you have to do what they say. Well, I'm going to take care of you, and so therefore, because I'm teaching you and training you, a portion of your income comes to me, or a portion of your future earnings comes to me, or you do these certain things for me, you kind of become beholden to the other individual, the benefactor. And this concept was very understood at the time because, well, they had much more clear, demarcated slavery. Today, I would say we probably have, because of credit, you don't feel like you're necessarily beholden to an individual. But back then, it was much more clearly linked to one specific individual where you'd have a benefactor. Well, now you can go get a credit card, or you can owe somebody for your car or something else along those lines, your house. But at this time, again, it was much more in your face. When you're talking about slavery, you're talking about indentured servitude. And so this idea of benefactors was a big thing. But they exercise authority over them and are called benefactors. Verse 26, but not so among you. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs as he who serves. For who is greater, he who sits at the table or he who serves? Is it not he who sits at the table? Yet I am among you as the one who serves. So he gives them kind of flipping on the head. Well, let's talk about what you can become. Let's talk about reaching your potential there and self-actualizing. You know, you've been following me for 3.5 years. Who's the greatest now? Who's been the most loyal? Which of you have done the most miracles? I mean, that shows that the Spirit from God is working through me is now through you. Obviously, that's going to be the one who's the greatest, right? No, he didn't pander to that kind of mentality because he's trying to teach them about the heart of the matter, quite literally. He says, "This, you know, who has this heart? Who has the heart of service?" And so this concept of what you can become and what we can do to self-actualize, you know, I don't know many, and I'm not saying they aren't out there, but I don't know many people who think, you know what? Forget about that doctor lawyer thing. If people just like you and you're a nice person. Now, you might say that to a kid growing up when you're not trying to push them into any sort of outcome. But when they get to high school age and you're trying to, like, what are you going to go to college for? Am I going to pay $30,000, $40,000, $80,000, $100,000 for you to go to school and then not be able to pay back the loan? Or what are you? Then it's kind of like brass tacks, rubber meets the road there. What are you going to do? Because, you know what, being a nice person isn't going to pay the mortgage. Being this, so you kind of move away from that and we say, well, what can you become? And so what is your potential? And we'll look for aptitudes. And I'm not saying don't do this, but we kind of move away from the concept of the heart of the matter and the child that Jesus Christ took onto his lap. And it's like, well, be like this child. Yeah, well, I want you to move out and not live in my basement. And so I would like you to self-actualize a little bit more. Reach a little bit more higher, a little bit higher up for your potential and potentially move out, right? Or potentially go find a spouse and these other things. And we can so easily get caught up in what we can become or what our children can become or what others are becoming around us. And we can be there like the disciples were at this time, kind of arguing about what we have you know, who I am or what I can do with it. It's very linked with that. And that is kind of where we cap out, that we top out at that kind of thought process as a human being. But then there's another way to look at potential, because how we define our potential as what we can become is very limiting. It's very frustrating. Because then if we don't become as much as we think we ought to, or as we want to, or as much as what will afford us what we want to have, all these other things, you get frustration. It's unmet expectations. I expected to do better in life. I expected to achieve more. I expected to, you know, have more potential, realize more of that. Why can't I do that? Well, you're getting in my way, or you stopped me, or all these other conversations that can come up. But that's kind of, again, where we top out. So then, second part of this message here, we looked at how we define our potential, but then there's how God defines our potential. We often define our potential, what can I become? God defines our potential, what can this person be changed into? It's moderately different, but he asks, what can this person be changed into? Now, I might have made a good lawyer, but I will tell you, not a good ball player. I couldn't play basketball. I can't, you know, I'm not tall enough. The stature is not there. There are things I just can't become, even if I might want to, right? I can go practice that and I might do better at it, right? At this point in my life, I am not going to become a linguist. I am not going to become those people who do word things. I won't become that. Grammaticist? Something along those lines, right? But there are things that you can probably look at your life and be like, well, maybe if I had started earlier, I could have become that. Maybe I would like to have had, you know, the potential to do those things. But then you look and you're like, you see very petite people that want to play basketball. You're like, it's not going to happen, right? Because it's just not possible. And so you kind of have to compromise between what you would like and what you aspire to and maybe what you can actually do. And so that's where, when we talked about self-actualization, it's rooted in a grasp of the real world, because there are things you're just not going to be able to do. I'd love to be a billionaire, right? Wouldn't we all? Oh, that'd be great. But I wasn't born into an oil-rich Saudi family, so it's just not going to happen, or whatever the case is, right? And so we cap out, again, we top out there. But God says, well, what can this person be changed into? And God doesn't look at us, or any of humanity, for that matter, from the concept of what Maslow was talking about with self-actualization. He's not bound by that. And that's the beauty of what we're called to. This is the thing that I think we need to keep hold of this. Because it's so easy to be drawn into the self-actualization of what I can become and forget that we don't play by those same rules, because our dad, he's the ultimate programmer. He put it into place. That's not what he has set up. God says, what can we be changed into? And this is more the concept of a transformation. He doesn't look at self-actualization. He looks at transformation. In molecular biology, transformation speaks to the genetic alteration of a cell, resulting from the direct uptake and incorporation of exogenous DNA from its surroundings via the cell membrane. How's that for a technical definition? Word things, you know. Essentially what it's saying is, a cell takes something that is not of the cell, from outside of the cell, external to the cell, incorporates it in such a way that the cell transforms. Now, there are a number of things. It doesn't have to be a mutation, but this is a transformation. It doesn't have to be a mutation where it like becomes something abnormal or something like that. But you take something from outside of the cell, introduce it to the cell, and then the cell can be something different. We are what they call a carbon-based life form. So we have the potential to be squished really hard and turn into a diamond. There's a potential, the transformation. We're a carbon-based life form, right? That's transformation. I don't know how much carbon they actually get out of one of us. I didn't look into that. But, you know, there's amazing potential there where you go ahead and you take something, introduce pressure, which is going to generate the heat, and it can become something else. That's like saying, you know what? You might be a little diminutive of stature, but we can stretch you right on out, and you're going to be the best center the NBA has ever seen. That just doesn't happen. How do you do that? Well, you're not playing by the same rules because we set the limitations when we talk about what our potential is. And we talk about self-actualization, taking what we see, being bound by the real world. I'll put that in air quotes, real world, because it's just the physical world that we see. And we have a hard time understanding the things of God, because what man can know the things of God save for if you have the Spirit of God? We have to have that. We have to remember that. And so many times we go right back to, well, we can understand the things of man because we have the Spirit of man, and so that's kind of where we top out. But we're different. This is the beauty of what God does as He calls us. We're called to be a bunch of mutants in that way, the mutation, to transform into something else. There is also the beauty of life. You take one cell, you interact with another cell, and you get a human being. You take the egg and you take the sperm, and it becomes a new creation, a new life. Again, a transformation. Beforehand, it was nothing. Beforehand, they couldn't do anything of and by themselves. You need to have the other one. You need to have the interaction there. Let's go to Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Because we see this here as God is looking at our potential. From the very beginning, it's an amazing thing because He recorded for us this conversation at the beginning of the book. I think purposefully so that we would look at it and consider it. Because we need to know this. Again, don't be bound in our mind when we talk about potential and what we can become and what we can do in this life just by the physical things that are in front of us. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 says, "Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him, male and female, He created them." We are made to be in the image of God, with the potential to be God. We'll get into that a little bit later. But this tendency of humans, of us, to be so myopic in how we view it. I consider, it was Elisha, right? He's there telling the king of Israel the moves that I believe it was the king of Assyria was making. Whatever, and the king of Assyria was like, "Who is the spy among us?" He says, "Oh, no, it's this prophet in Israel. He knows the things that you say in your private quarters, and he's telling the king of Israel, it's him." So he goes, he sends all of these armies to go get Elisha. Elisha was not hiding. He was in Dothan. Everybody knew he was there. Going to go get him. And his servant wakes up in the morning, looks out, goes, probably chokes a little bit. Maybe he darts right back into the house and goes, "Elisha, do you see what's out there?" And then Elisha looks out and he's like, "Oh, don't be worried. There are more, those who are for us are more than those who you see out there." How do you have that vision? How do you have that faith? Well, you only have it if you're not bound by what we believe is possible, the potential that we see in this life. Because he's like, the guy was so gutsy that he's like, "You know, Elijah, the only thing I'd really like to ask is twice what you have. I'd like to have twice the spirit that you have, the ability to do these things." That man, Elijah told him, I can't fulfill that, but, you know, God has said, if you see me when I'm taken up, He's going to answer that for you. And he did. So then Elisha's like, "I'm not leaving your side." And Elijah tried to get him to go other places. He's like, "Nope, not happening. He's going to be there." And he wanted to be there to learn. He wanted to be there. But he fulfilled the will of God. And he had faith that God was going to fulfill that with him and all that he had to do. That man was unapologetic for so many things. I've used this story a couple times when I'm talking about respect with our kids, but it's like, he could call out a female bear to go maul some kids because they made fun of him for being bald. I mean, it's just like, it's a special individual there who knew God so well and the role that God had called him to, that he didn't question in that way his potential, what he could do. He wasn't bound in that same way by the real world of self-actualization of what he could become. He saw, in many cases, as God saw. He saw the fiery chariots all the way around. He saw the potential of what was there. He saw what God had in mind. And God gives us that glimpse here in Genesis 1. He says, you know what? I've made you in my image, in my likeness, our likeness here, like father and mother, like child. You can probably go and look at your kids, and you can be like, that's one of the first things we do when they're born. Oh, whose nose? Whose eyes? Oh, they scrunch. Oh, they talk like you. They walk like you. They sneeze. And all through life, we kind of go through this process of being like, yeah, I see me or you in our children. Or other people will comment on it. How is it any different when we're talking about us and God? It shouldn't be any different. The potential is there. And the beauty of it is, when we're talking about transformation, we're talking about our relationship with God, he's doing this with adopted children. He's bringing them in, and the transformation begins. Because you take something and you introduce an external component, force, an external aspect of things. In this case, it's his Holy Spirit that transforms us into something new. Let's go to Romans chapter 8. Verse 6, we'll see this. Romans chapter 8. Because this is what got Paul killed. But this is what had all of those Jews up in arms so much that they would follow him all around as he went on his journey. Because God wasn't just working with his children in Israel, but he was working with, I'm happy to transform anyone who's willing to come. You actually see that throughout. There are a number of individuals who were transformed by the influence of God, who were not of the tribe of Israel, who were in the lineage of Jesus Christ. I think that's a very important thing. God says, you know what? If you're willing to be transformed and come and to listen and to think and to see the potential that I have laid out for you, love to have you. And it's a beautiful thing. Romans chapter 8 and verse 6, we read, for to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. It's just not possible. It's not compatible. If we're stuck in a mindset of self-actualization and viewing potential as what we can become based on our creativity, based on our independence, based on our spontaneity, based on what we see in the real world around us, we will never get to the point of transformation as God wants us. We will be stuck in that self-actualization mindset, which is just as far as the human mind can go. But we must have God's Spirit, his mind, because our mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. Verse 8, so then those who are in the flesh cannot please God. But we are not in the flesh. We ought not be, but in the Spirit, if indeed the Spirit of God dwells in us. Now, if anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, he is not his. And if Christ is in you, the body is dead because of sin, but the Spirit is life because of righteousness. But if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit, which dwells in you. See, we have the opportunity there of transformation. From what we are, or what we were, through the process of our conversion and the time as we look back, again, you look back at your life, since you've come into the knowledge and the understanding and the unity of God as we sang in the song. That transformation that has occurred in your life, in my life, hopefully we can see that from the time of lugging compost buckets, right, to where we are now, that opportunity for growth, that opportunity for transformation, moving again beyond just the mere potential of what the individual components of our life and our environment might afford us. But God is willing to give life to our mortal bodies through His Spirit which dwells in us. Verse 12, going on here, it says, "Therefore, brethren, we are debtors, not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. But if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are sons of God. For you did not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you received the spirit of adoption, by which we cry out, 'Abba, Father.' And the Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with Him, that we may also be glorified together." This goes right back to what we read in Genesis 1, 26 and 27. Not only are we made in His image, in the likeness of Him, but He gives us His Spirit. And if we're led by that Spirit, if we're abiding in that, taking that guidance, and much like the sperm and the egg concept, the impregnation of our minds, and we're being transformed to grow, we have the potential to be transformed from something that is just going to die to something that can have true eternal life. And that's a phenomenal difference. Lawyer? Doctor? Heir with Jesus Christ. Might be a tough one, right? You think about Naaman. Naaman's told he's got leprosy. And he goes to talk to Elisha. Elisha tells him, this is the other thing I was thinking about, when just the potential with, I mean, Elisha doesn't even go out to go see him. And Naaman's a little bit angry about that. He's like, "He's not even going to come out to see me?" He says, "Go wash in the Jordan." He's like, you've probably seen creeks like that. You're like, "Oh, not so sure about that one," right? I don't know if it was just a small, nasty part of the Jordan over there where Elisha was, but Naaman didn't want to do it. It was like, "Why wouldn't you do it?" is what is essentially what his servant said. Naaman's all affronted. He's all offended by it. He doesn't want to go do it. And his servant says, What are you going to lose? Go and try it. And so he does. But we have the opportunity, again, if we allow His Spirit to guide and direct us, to be transformed. That was a miracle that occurred in the life of Naaman, to where he became clean. Now, he was physically clean, but it was a spiritual thing that occurred in the softening of his mind and his heart to be willing to take that lead. I'm not saying he was converted, but he did allow the words of God through the prophet Elisha to change his pomp, his pride, to say, "You know what? Okay. We'll do this." And we actually see that in a number of instances. You see that in Nebuchadnezzar. You see that Darius, you know, in allowing them to go back to Israel, seeing that, that was Cyrus. Darius was during Daniel. But you see individuals being influenced by God, and when they allow themselves to be influenced in that way, to be guided by His Spirit, there's a potential that opens up that was not there before. And that is where we're talking about the transformation. We have the opportunity to be transformed, to be, as we read here in Romans 8, joint heirs with Jesus Christ. Revelation chapter 21. Revelation 21. Revelation 21, verse 3. It says, "And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, 'Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and He will dwell with them, and they shall be His people. God Himself will be with them and be their God.'" If you go down to verse 7, "He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son." The potential that God is seeing and sharing, again, woven all throughout Scripture from Genesis to Revelation, is the opportunity that is present because He has made us in His image, in His likeness. Male and female, He has made us in His likeness to be there, to be our God. He wants us to be His people. He wants us to be His children. 1 John 3. 1 John chapter 3, beginning of the chapter there. It says, behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called children of God. Therefore, the world does not know us, because it did not know Him. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be, but we know that when He is revealed, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. See, the only uncertainty that we have when we're talking about our potential with God, being an heir with Christ, joint heirs, sons, children, is we're not 100% sure what we're going to look like. But we know from Genesis that we're made in His image, in His likeness. It's kind of like, you can look at a sonogram and be like, oh, cute button nose, nice round forehead. Oh, it's a boy. Oh, it's a girl. But you know, 100%, you know what kind of baby you're having? A human being. There's no question. You're going to be a human being. You're going to be in the image of your parents. We're not sure what color your hair might be. We're not sure how tall or thin or all of these other things that you might be. But we know you're going to be a human being. So we don't know the physical features that we might have, or I guess in this case, the spiritual features that we might have. But God says, we're made in His image, and we're going to be His children. There's not going to be any question. The potential is there. Again, those who are guided by the Spirit, those who have the Spirit of God, the Spirit of Christ in us, and we're allowing that to be what transforms us, well, then there is the potential to be there in His family. See, when God looks at us, and He's talking about our potential, it's not about a position around a table. It's not about a job that we might be able to do. It's more about what that position allows us to become. Because anything that we self-actualize to or become in this life that He allows is there for the purpose of our growth and our transformation into a better suited child in His family. That's what all of that is there for. It's about inclusion in His family. So if we get an opportunity to do something in this life, well then the potential is not just to have that role, to have that responsibility, but the potential is, well, what can I do in this role then to learn, to transform, to be better at the various things that God has called us to become. Let's go to Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8. We've looked at today just the concept of what is our potential. And there is an incredible amount of potential for each and every human being who has ever lived. There's incredible human potential for everyone who has ever lived. But today in this life, for those who have accepted God's call and those who have accepted the responsibility, the position of having His Spirit and allowing that to change who we are and to guide us along the path towards righteousness, towards wisdom, towards understanding, towards following Him, we have the potential to not only become something, but to be transformed into something that we would not be able to become of and by ourselves. Luke chapter 8 and verse 10. Luke chapter 8 and verse 10 says, but if Christ is in you, the body is dead because of sin, but the Spirit is life because of righteousness. To us it has been given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. We have the opportunity to look out at the mountains and to see fiery chariots and to see Him working in our life. We have the opportunity to transform and not just be what we are. The Spirit that He has given us leads us and guides us to righteousness. He has called us out of darkness into light so that we can see and know and understand what our true potential is. And it's important for us to remember that as we go through our day-to-day life. It's not about self-actualization. It's not about reaching the pinnacle of our human capabilities. Because that It's nothing in comparison. What God has called us to do is not just to reach our potential humanly, but to reach our potential spiritually in the next life. It's not about self-actualization. It's about transformation. So as we go through this next week, cover in the next sermon, our purpose. But as we go through this next week, I would like to challenge us all to remember what is our potential. And to not only look at that in the mirror and what we can see, but again, more importantly, to look at that through the eyes of God and how He has called us and what He has wanted for us and what He has recorded in the Scripture from Genesis to Revelation.